This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, thanks for tuning in.
Kia ora, everyone.
Back in the studio.
Back in the studio.
Yay. So this is our first episode of the year together because Bella was still on holiday.
Yeah, I was in holiday mode.
Nice.
I just forgot that it was the start of the year and I was like, oh, Holly, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it takes a while to kind of get back into things, eh? It's kind of late January is the grace period.
Yeah, yeah. Back into it now, though.
Yeah. And so did you get lots of reading done over summer?
Not heaps, actually. I was staying at my partner's family house and there were five teenagers there.
Oh,
so
wow.
There wasn't much like relaxing downtime.
Yeah, I always think I'm going to read more than I actually end up doing. Or I think I slow down my reading pace over summer, like luxuriate in the book.
Yeah, I did that a bit as well actually because I've been trying. I want to read more nonfiction this year, but I find it. At the moment, it's quite slow going, even if I'm really enjoying it. So it's been good just to sort of slow down and like sit with it a bit more.
Yeah, and you can kind of absorb it a bit better.
Yeah.
So yeah, our theme today is nonfiction, which
topical.
Yeah, I didn't really intend to be reading nonfiction because I'm usually sort of a novel person.
Mm.
A novel person. But yeah, so what have you brought in today?
I've got two books. The first one is called Art Monsters, Unruly Bodies in Feminist Art, and it's by Lauren Elkin, who is a sort of a French-American writer. And I'd known about her for a wee while. This book was recommended to me by my old co-worker at the Port Chalmers Library. And she's written another book, which I haven't read, but it was quite well received, called, excuse my terrible pronunciation, like Flaneuse, Woman Walk the City.
Is she French?
French-American. Okay. Yeah, I think she lived in Paris and now lives in, I'm going to guess, New York would be.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, she's also quite a well-known essayist. They've been in lots of well-regarded publications. And she's also a translator, and I have one of her books. She just published one of Simone de Beauvoir's previously unpublished novel, The Inseparables.
Wow.
She did the translation for that, which I do have on my shelf. I got for free from the bookshop, so
cool.
Excited to read that.
Did that just come out last year?
I think it was out last year, yeah.
Huh.
So I'll probably review that at some point
cool. This
year. So yeah, this one is called Art Monsters, just to say it again. And this did take me a long time to get through. I read it over about 2 months, so it was a very long reading period for me. And it was a bit of a tough read for me. So it's explores the female artists who like place the body, usually their own bodies, like at the center of their work, who really focus on embodiment, flesh, sexuality, pain, pleasure and excess, and use that to make like pretty provocative art from that material. So it's a really wide-ranging and ambitious book. And definitely introduced me to a lot of artists that I hadn't encountered before, which I think is one of the real strengths of the book. I did find it was pretty destabilizing read. Like, it's quite fragmentary. It's not, I sort of was like, it's hard to tell if it's meant to be like a conjoined book or a book of essays.
Okay.
And I think it was meant to be one whole like book together, but it did definitely read.
Like, is it linear?
It's hard to sort of categorize.
Okay.
I think that's why I found it took me a long time to read it.
Yeah.
Because it felt at times that I was really floundering rather than being sort of guided through what she was writing about.
We always used to use this term when I was doing my master's, that the text throws you out, like you get thrown out of the book.
Yeah.
And then you're like, hang on, where am I? And have to like do work to get back into it.
Yeah, that's definitely how I felt with that. And there's a lot of art theory and sort of art speak, which I think for some readers they'll really enjoy that, and I often enjoy that. I read a lot of books about like art and artists, but I personally found her interpretations kind of pretentious sometimes, or like really overblown. And that's I acknowledge that's probably a personal criticism rather personal reaction rather than like a wholesale criticism. But for me, it made the reading experience quite challenging at times.
Good on you for persevering it.
Was like my first nonfiction. I guess I started it last year, but I was like, I need to finish this.
Okay.
Because there was like, there's so many interesting ideas, like there's lots of ideas and like references. And it was like, you know, I was writing a lot down, like it was gripping me overall, but like it was just quite overwhelming in the way that she puts it together. It was like, it's not like, not like my fave Olivia Lang.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, because I mean, you always say Olivia Lang's quite good at having references that then you go on sort of a journey to other writers. Or
I found that was not so much here, but it's when I'm like, maybe I'll come back and read it or read parts of it at times just to sort of absorb it properly. But yeah, and I really enjoyed how she like wove her own experiences into the book. So like her reflections on feminism and on being a woman in the world and that sort of thing. I thought that really helped. I was like, kind of wanted to be more of that rather than these like, it's like pretentious kind of repetitive.
Well, like name dropping?
Sort of. It's just, and like a lot of repetition of like her idea. I'm trying to think. So there's a central concept is the art monster, which is like, she ends up questioning the usefulness of that term. So using like the art monster as like, say, a male art monster is the man who's like entirely dedicated to his art, and like, say, the woman in his life supports him in every other way because he's like so focused on his art and like creating the masterpiece. And then so Elkin is like questioning the usefulness of that term applying to woman, whereas like converting that traditionally masculine figure into a female one can be a trap. And it's like, so because that still casts woman as like the other, reacting to patriarchy rather than defining their own aesthetic terms, if that makes sense. So she sort of then talks about it as like being women who make this art from their own bodies and like, you know, that sort of thing. But it's just, I feel like she just kept losing the thread.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. That like really ties into the book that I've bought in.
Perfect. What's your one?
So I've been reading a book called Wifedom, Mrs. Orwell's Invisible Life. Ooh, and yes, that's written by Anna Funder. It's talking about that sort of the hidden presence behind the great artist, which is often a woman, you know, if you're looking back in history especially. I'll just a wee bit about Anna Funder. She's an Australian author and she's written several books. This book, Wifedom, was the Sunday Times bestseller and New York Times notable book of 2023. So, yeah, it came out a couple of years ago. I think she lived in New York with her family, but now she's in Sydney, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really engaging biography. I didn't actually mean to pick it up and start reading it, but did. And then realised that I was continuing with it and I was like, okay, here we go. It's a biography about Orwell's first wife, Elaine O'Shaughnessy. I can't quite pronounce that.
Shaughnessy.
So she later became Elaine Blair because George Orwell's pen was a pen name, and so Orwell's real name is Eric Blair, which I didn't know, which I thought was quite fascinating. Funder, the author, she read six of Orwell's major biographies, and they're all written by men. And so this kind of sparked, you know, because the way in which they just kind of gleaned over certain aspects of his life, like a lot of his funding came from an auntie. A lot of women were, you know, advocating for his writing. Anyway, so... it's based on some newly discovered letters that Elaine, his wife, was writing to her best friend. So she sort of recreates the marriage through the Spanish Civil War and World War II in London. She's got a really interesting, readable approach to the biography, sort of like it's a creative hybrid of life writing, feminist, polemic, and literary criticism. She has this way of like filling up gaps For instance, one of Orwell's friends had noted that Orwell's always dropping ash everywhere. And so she's describing the scene where they meet and kind of, yeah, giving the subjects kind of actions, like directive actions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's quite an interesting approach. So, yeah, she argues with Elaine as the key witness that patriarchy allows men to quarantine their professional and private lives, delegate and lie to the women who support them and leave them out of the story. So Elaine went to Oxford on a scholarship but dropped out of a Masters of Art in Psychology at the University College of London to move to a cold, unplumbed country cottage so that her new husband, Orwell, could write. And she ran the farm and they had like a little shop there that like earned hardly any money. She typed and edited his work, held paying jobs, cared for their adopted son and nursed him when he was sick with tuberculosis. And yeah, she died when she was 39. I haven't actually finished the book, so I'm not
so young.
Entirely sure what happened. The Guardian writes that wifedom is a dashing addition to a genre of books that bring out the obscurity, the woman and occasionally man behind famous writers and artists. So yeah, it's really looking at her. I mean, at one point she goes to join him in Spain and yeah, to his support of the anti-fascists. It talks about, I can't remember the book it was he wrote about his time then, but it mentions my wife like 37 times, but he never credits her with anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, and there's been some interesting articles in The Guardian about this book because, you know, there's a lot to do with like his affairs with women and, you know, that he apparently slept with this one woman and the daughter of that woman is like, no, that never happened, but they were always flirting. I mean, it's a little, I don't think that Anna Funder, the author, is trying to like shame him in any way. It's just trying to bring to light. Orwell was quite, you know, he understood colonialism and how problematic that was because he was brought up in Burma, and yet he still sort of really failed to see women as equal or how problematic the world's relationship with women is.
Yeah.
Free labor.
Huge blind spot.
Yeah, like get a wife, it's free labor and all this sort of stuff. So she really goes into all of that. So yeah, it's very interesting read. I definitely recommend it.
I think I have that on my bookshelf at home.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that's been at the Athenaeum and I'm like, oh, okay, it's been out a bunch of times. Actually, my mum read it and then she sent it back to me and that's why I ended up picking it up.
Yeah.
Don't usually like the same book as my mum, but there you go. But it's an important text for women, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And it's once you start reading about that sort of thing and how many famous men, male artists, are like you, so propped up by women and often like their work is partially or...
And funded. Like his life is funded by his aunt.
Like the editors.
The
like,
other biographers, all men, never sort of... you know, made sort of a real mention of or...
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's not written in a way to kind of, you know, turn Orwell into some sort of enemy. It's just, yeah, hearing...
Like, here's a different way of looking at, like, his life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's wifedom.
Well, very good. Can't wait to read it. The next one I read is very different from those two. It's called Say Nothing by Patrick Radden Keefe. And I can't remember if I talked about his other book I read. I don't think I did on this show, but I've read his other book called Empire of Pain, The Secret History of the Sackler Dynasty, where he told the story of the family who are in large part responsible for America's opioid epidemic. And I loved that book. It was such...
Did I talk about it?
I can't remember.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
But like... So I knew going into this that he's a fantastic nonfiction writer. So this is a work of narrative nonfiction that really blends true crime, political history, and moral inquiry. And it's so the centre of the book is the 1972 disappearance of a woman called Jean McConville, who was a widowed mother of 10 who was abducted from her Belfast home during the Troubles and who became one of the IRA's disappeared. So... this is a book about the Troubles. That's why I picked it up, because it's a big, something I knew about in passing. Like, I've been to Belfast and like today, like the segregation between Catholics and Protestants is still so visible. and I've always wanted to learn more, but just been a bit daunted by it, I think.
Yeah, I think because you don't tend to learn that in New Zealand. Like, I found that when I was living in the UK, everyone just knew all the facts, and I felt very in the dark about it.
Yeah, and it's something, a conflict that is very murky. So I was never really sure what a good way to sort of learn about it would be, but I recommend this book wholeheartedly. So Keith uses McConville's murder or disappearance, sorry, spoiler, as a real narrative anchor, and then he expands that out into this really sweeping history of the Troubles, which just was a decades-long conflict in Northern Ireland that killed around 4,000 people before the Good Friday Peace Agreement in 1998. So from this one crime, he branches out to explore lots of key figures in the Troubles, like Gerry Adams, who was the leader of Sinn Féin, the sort of one of the political parties in Northern Ireland, an IRA commander, Brendan Hughes, the hunger striker, Bobby Sands, who did die of his hunger strike, and these two sisters called the Price sisters, and especially one called Dolores Price, who was a young woman who joined the IRA and became part of an elite and secretive unit known as the Unknown. So there's lots of like these really larger than life, incredibly interesting people that he brings into the story. It's such a compelling read. It's not just the history, which is full of so many, like, there's just so many interesting stories. Like, I was like, wow, like, I can't believe that happened. Like, the two Price sisters, there used to be lots of like bank robberies to fund the IRA. So the Price sisters once went into a bank dressed as nuns and like pulled like huge assault rifles out of their habits and like held up the bank. I was like, just lots of stories like that. We were like, wow, like, that really happened. Yeah. But yeah, it really highlights how personal this conflict was, where the violence was really intimate. So it was like neighbours against neighbours. So, for example, when Jean McConville was originally taken, her children recognised their abductors and would then see them around town for years afterwards. So it's like that horror was never really abstract, and he really brings that home in this book. He spent 4 years researching this book and interviewed over 100 people. Many of them had lived by the IRA's code of silence for decades. And yeah, he, just the way he uses these testimonies that reveal these acts of violence, but like the really deep moral injury of the paramilitary fighters who then went on to feel really betrayed by the peace process, because they kind of felt like, well, what did we achieve by doing all these like really horrible, violent things? So yeah, it's, and that were really haunted by what they'd done in the name of the cause for the Northern Ireland is still a part of the UK. So it's like, what did they actually achieve? Yeah, it's still a real like cold
having
piece
to live
there.
With
yeah.
With that. Yeah.
But yeah, I loved this book. I think it would be one of my top reads of the year. I will say that now. Like,
when did it come out? Was it last year?
No, it's been out for a while, because this is like one of, like, I'd heard of it a lot, of like, it's one of the most well-regarded nonfiction books, I think. And it came back into my awareness because they, I think last year or the year before, there was a Hulu, I think, released like a fictionalized account of, called Say Nothing, of the show, but it sort of focused more on the Price sisters so they're, rather than Jean McConville's.
And are they still alive today, the Price sisters?
I think they're both dead.
Okay.
But I think Dolores definitely is.
Yeah.
Maybe not the other sister.
Yeah, it sounds really, really interesting.
It was really interesting.
And so really, like, a good way to kind of engage with Ireland's history.
Yeah, amazing. Like, just the way he threads, like, these narrative stories, but you get a really good view of the Troubles and all the different, like, sides of it. And, yeah, I feel like I understand it now, and with the understanding of just how complex it is. Like, yeah, I highly recommend it for, even if you don't like nonfiction, it has like the pace of a crime novel, really compelling. It's quite a thick book, but like, yeah, it's gripping. So
awesome.
Yeah.
What's the name again?
It's called Say Nothing, Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland by Patrick Redden Keefe.
Thanks. So my one is quite different again. I picked up Anne Carson's Wrong Norma, which came out last year, I think. For those of you that aren't familiar with Anne Carson, they say she's probably one of our most celebrated living poet, winner of countless awards, and routinely tipped for the Nobel Prize in Literature. When writing about what Wrong Norma is, so it's a quote from Anne Carson, Wrong Norma is a collection of writings about different things like Joseph Conrad, Flaubert, snow, poverty, Rogert's Thesaurus, my dad, Saturday night, Socrates, writing sonnets, forensics, encounters with lovers, the word idea, the feet of Jesus, and Russian thugs. The pieces are not linked. That's why I've called them wrong. So, she's known for like poetry and essays and prose and criticism and this sort of thing. I've only read Red Dock by her, which is, I guess, classified as like a poetry book, and that's sort of about her mother's death. And it's really where, I mean, if you're familiar with poetry, the forward slash comes from is very much an Anne Carson trope. And it's pretty wonderful. It's quite a dense book, Red Doc, but this one, Wrong Norma, I found really easy to engage with. It's definitely a lot more prosier, and you can kind of just jump ahead, and like I jumped ahead to read Saturday Night, and it's like being an adult on a Saturday night and they go for dinner. So it's quite good. On the cover there's kind of like this loose sketch on it that I don't quite like, but it sort of resonates with the text as having a kind of looseness, like a fluidity, like a thought process. It's like working out ideas. You're really there with the writer. There's sort of almost like a journal, like there's editing on the page, and you know, some of the pages look like they've just been scanned from a journal, which is quite nice. It makes it quite intimate. There's like repetitions of some ideas, like Jam. There's this really great one about, do you like this filmmaker? Do you like Jam? And it goes on like that. I say that her ideas are like ice. Her ideas are like ice floating upon the water, occasionally bumping into each other, separate but connected by the vast depth of meaning a single word can hold. She's obsessed with words. At one point saying, words, oh, I don't know, dangling their little roots in the past as they reach forward to reach towards us. And I was just going to read a quote from the book because there's this bit in it where she's going to visit her mother, who's sort of on her last, like on her deathbed, I suppose. And her mother's living in, you know, like a rest home. And her mother says, it's funny to have no home. Funny being a funny word for what she meant. I say this now to remind myself how words can squirt sideways, mute and mad. You think they are tools or toys or tame, and all at once they burn off all your clothes and you're standing there singed and ridiculous in the glare of the lightning. Which I think is just, a really good summary of the way in which she can just delve into something like this.
Yeah.
Brilliant. She's brilliant.
That is brilliant.
I think because I started to read her by entering with that Red Dock, which was a poetry book, I kind of was like, oh, this is dense, kind of academic-ish poetics. Definitely I think Wrong Norma, this book, is a nicer way to go into her writing. I don't know how many books she's written now.
Quite a lot.
She's born in the 50s in Toronto, so she's been doing it for quite a while. She studied, you know, the classics, like Greek classical.
Yeah, that's how I first read her, was her translation of Song and Brand for Me, Sappho, which is beautiful.
She's a real favourite of like artists and creatives and... I actually want to buy this book, I think.
That's a good endorsement.
And own it.
I will have to read it before I buy it, otherwise it will go to the place where books go to die, which is my bookshelf.
Yeah.
Actually, I've already read this one. I don't know why I said it. And I loved it. So.
Yeah, it's yeah, it's a pretty chunky book. I haven't, yeah, it doesn't, we don't have it at the Athenaeum, who brings you this wonderful show. Yeah, we're going to be having some exciting things coming up at the library this year, which we will probably talk about on our next show.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've run out of time.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
It's good to be back.
It is. See you next time.
See ya. Books Uncovered, exciting conversations about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.